Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Yud Zayin Amud Bet by the Mishnah. Mishnah begins, Beit Shammai Omrim, En Shorin Dio, Usmanim, Karsinim, Elekadesh Yishoru Mi Ba'od Yom. So you're not allowed to soak these items, Dio being ink, Usmanim being dyes. Karsinim, from Rashi, sounds like some sort of animal feed, bean of some sort, or it's others translate it as an alkaline plant. Elekadesh Yishoru, until they dissolve Mi Ba'od Yom. They have to dissolve prior to the beginning of Shabbat. That's Beit Shammai's opinion. Beit Hillel Matirim. Beit Hillel says, no problem. Beit Shammai Omrim. Can't put bundles of wet flax into the oven. Till they become white before Shabbat, the onset of Shabbat. Rashi and Tosafot say that it's, you're trying to whiten the flax, and that's why you're putting them in there. There are other opinions, like the Revo suggests that the reason you're putting them in there is to dry them out. There's wet flax, and you're trying to dry them out beforehand. Ela veloat the tzemer liyore, can't place wool into the cauldron, into the kettle. El kadeshi glota ayin, unless the color takes hold, the dye takes hold prior to the Shabbat. Beit Hillel matirim, in all these cases, Beit Hillel says no problem. Shammai omrim im porsim mitzudot chayav ufot v'dagim, one may not set out traps for animals, fish, birds. Ela kadeshi tzodu mi ba'od yom, unless they trap during the day prior to Shabbat. Beit Hillel matirim, in that case, Beit Hillel says no problem. Tosafot quotes the Yushalmi, how is he sure that it's going to capture before daytime? They put it in the forest where there are lots of animals, trap that only has room for one animal, that they can be pretty sure that it'll work before Shabbat comes in. Beit Shammai omrim, ein mochrim lenachri, ve'ein to'anim imo, ve'ein magbin alav, elekadesh yagil makom akaruv. One may not sell an item to a nachri, you may not help load onto his donkey, ve'ein magbin alav, and you can't load him up with any merchandise or items. Elekadesh yagil makom akaruv, unless he can get to a place close by, meaning a place that he needs to get to prior to the onset of Shabbat. Rashi says, the nirak misayol alich b'Shabbat. Looks like you're helping him to carry these items on Shabbat. Beit Hillel matirim, you do this all the way up to the moment before Shabbat. I mean, even if you've sold it to the nachri, so it's not even your item anymore. It's no problem for the nachri to take an item that he bought from you. Problem is that it looks like he's doing work on your behalf. That one may not give skins to the tanner to work them. One may not give them to a non-Jewish launderer. Unless all the work is completed before the onset of Shabbat. Ukulan, Beit Hillel matirim im ha-shemesh. Beit Hillel says you can give it to him right before sunset. I'm Rabbi Shimon Uleo. Noagim ayu Beit Abba. They were machmir on themselves and they were noheg. Shayu nodim klei lavan lekoves. Nachrish, lo sheyamim kodem leShabbat. They used to give white clothing to the non-Jewish launderer 3 days before Shabbat. White clothing took longer to launder. Vishavin, elu velu, shetoanim korat Beit Avad v'igulei agat. Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai agree that when it comes to these items, you're allowed to do them right at the onset of Shabbat, and that is to put the korot, the heavy beams, on the olive press, the igulei agat, and the round weights on the grapes. In both of these instances, and as Rashi explains here, and the Gemara is going to explain it later, what we are worried about is malacha de'oraita. When we're talking about malacha that's mina Torah, then we don't want you doing that right before Shabbat and letting it roll into the Shabbat, because if you did it on Shabbat, you'd be chayav chatat. So we don't want you doing it right before Shabbat, because then you're going to come to do it on Shabbat. Where we're dealing with items that only meet the Rabbanan on Shabbat, then if you do them right with onset of Shabbat, we're not so worried, because even if you went over into Shabbat, you won't be in violation to Rabbanan. So as Rashi points out over here, these two pressings are only dinei de Rabbanan. Because when you put the korot on the Beit Avad, in the olive press, you put the heavy beams down, and with the igulei gat, when you put these heavy, round weights on the grapes, they've already been pressed. The grapes have already been stomped on, and then after they've been stomped on, they bring the pile together in the center into a circle, and then they press the weights on them to press them again or to get the residual out. So the pressing, the main isur of dash has already been done, just to separate the liquid from the solid. That's already been completed because you stomped on them. With the Beit Avad, with the olive press, They've already ground the olives. They milled the olives to get the juice out, and then afterwards they put them into the press to get the residual. So in both these cases, the ikur malacha of dash is to separate the liquid from the solid has already been done. What's left here is an isur derabanan, and therefore Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel agree here that if you did this right before Shabbat, it's okay. That is permissible. Because everything happens by itself. It's all working by itself, it's all happening by itself, and therefore it's permissible. Now there are a couple of things. Tosafot actually lays out principles that are being used here in order to explain what's happening here. Ein mochrim lenachri. If you look at there's a Tosafot on the previous Amud. Ein mochrim lenachri. Af agav. Even though over here, by the selling it to the Nachri, if you did this on Shabbat, you wouldn't be chayev chatat. Mikol makom, me'achar she'nachri michamer. O oseh b'Shabbat b'yadayim, davar she'Yisrael asur min haTorah, gazru rabbananim chashecha. So that's the first principle. If the non-Jew is doing something that you yourself couldn't do on Shabbat, and he has to actively be involved, then the Rabbanan said, don't do that right before Shabbat. Because it gets mixed up with your shliach, meaning that he's doing your bidding. Driving a donkey for you would be asur midoraita. Therefore, we say don't give it to an achri right before Shabbat to be mechamer, to drive the donkey. Because it would be asur for you. He's doing it biyadayim. And therefore, he might get mixed up with doing work for you on your behalf. Aval, bahanach dvarim dereisha, she'en oseh b'Shabbat isur biyadayim, lo gazru, id lav mechayev chatat. So for instance, by giving the skins to the tanner, why is there any problem there? He's not doing an Isur B'Yadayim. He puts them into the chemicals, he puts them into whatever has to do to cure the skin, and it's all done. So Nachri is not doing it B'Yadayim. So over there, Tosafot says, there the Isur is because if it was done on Shabbat, it would be an Isur Chatat. Therefore, you may not put it in before Shabbat. So the two principles that he's laying out for this Mishnah are, one, if you would be Chayav Chatat on Shabbat, you may not ask the Nachri to do it right before the Shabbat, going into the Shabbat, because of the risk that he might come to do it on Shabbat, even though it'll happen memela on Shabbat. The number two thing is, if you involve a non-Jew, if the non-Jew has to do the work biyadayim, he has to be actively involved, then it's problematic, because we would get mixed up bishlucho, as if he's doing your work, and since he's actively involved in the process, we don't allow you to do that coming into Shabbat. That's something that's asur min haTorah, that the Nachri is doing, that if you did it, it would be asur min haTorah. If he does it biyadayim, you can't do it. He says that'll explain basically what we laid out over here. Alright, so that's the two principles that Tosafot lays out. The other thing Tosafot mentions here, which is important, Rabbeinu Tam says this in a number of places. It's an interesting Rabbeinu Tam. He says it here, he says it in Avodah Zarah. He had a very interesting daya, which seems to be make a lot of sense, which is Mikanaya Nirala Rabbeinu Tam, Bahatir Adei Kablanut Nachri Livnot B'Shabbat. Here, if you hire a non-Jew to work and build your house, can they build on Shabbat? Now, if he's a direct employee of yours, the answer is obviously no. If you are hiring him, whether he is a day laborer, or whether he is hired by the month or the week, then you can't do it because he's clearly working on your behalf on Shabbat. On the other hand, if you hire him as a kablan, as a contractor, then when he works or how he works has nothing to do with you. You've now given it all over to his hands. You're paying for a finished product. A finished product that is up to him to take care of. You're not directly hiring him to do work on a specific day or any specific type of work. You're hiring him to have a finished product and you're paying him for that. How he chooses and when he chooses to do that, that's his own issue. That's his own business. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam suggested that hiring contractors would be mutar, which we don't do today. And the Rabbeinu Tam has strong arguments here. The Tosafot deals with some of the proofs that he brings and the rejection and the support of those proofs. But then at the end, very interesting line in the Tosafot, the Rabbeinu Tam paskin like that, and in Avodah Zarah it's much more explicit. Here he has one line, he says, Rabbeinu Tam, nami, shebana et beito, when he built his own house, lo samach al tshuvato v'lo ratza lahatir. He was not sumeich on his own chiddush to allow that a kablan, that a contractor could build on Shabbat, and he was not willing to allow that to happen, that he would not build in that manner. And that's the way we paskin, that even with the contractor, it's problematic unless it's chutz l'tchum, unless it's outside of the tchum Shabbat, where nobody will know that he's doing it. And they're over there, then there's no longer any worry that the kablan looks like he's working for you directly on Shabbat. And so then you've got rid of the Marat Ayin issue. And again, with kablanut, it's no problem because he's not working specifically for you, for a specific item, on a specific day.
But the only work can be done.
Yes, oh, very good. So that's the end of the Tosvot here. There's a Tosvot Yishanim that's added over here that says, first of all, Miu b'sadeh mutar, in fields it is mutar, as opposed to building houses, because Gemara has a principle, arisa rusutei avid. When a person works in the field, when it's a sharecropper, he's working on his own behalf, because he is a sharecropper. He gets a portion of the field. And so he's not working for you, he's working for his benefit, the 20 or 40% that he gets out of the field. That's why he's working. He couldn't care less about you. He has to pay you because he needs the field, but he's working on his own behalf. And there it's well known that people are sharecroppers, so there's no question over there. But like David just said, Uk Yisrael omer l'nachrid l'takei manalayim, olik not, al yomar taseh l'machar. When you give a nachrid a job to do on your behalf, to fix your shoes, or to take care of some item, to buy something, you don't tell him to do it tomorrow. Do it on Shabbat. Dim kein avish kischir yom. Because then he becomes like a day laborer for you. You do it when you want. If he chooses to do it on Shabbat, that's his choice. As long as you're not directing him or forcing him to do it on Shabbat and do the malach on your behalf. That's why important here, it's less common in Israel, but in Chutz La'aretz it's much more common. People, for instance, with a mechanic, want to drop their car off before Shabbat and pick it up on Motzei Shabbat. If you drop it off 2 minutes before Shabbat and pick it up 2 minutes after Shabbat, it's clear that he did the work on Shabbat. He has no choice. You have to give him the option to do the work. If you drop it off 2 hours before Shabbat and he's too busy and he decides to do it on Shabbat, that's his choice. You gave him enough time to do it beforehand. How he chooses to prioritize and to do the work, that's his issue. But you have to give him the opportunity or the ability to do the work before the onset of Shabbat. Right, those are two very important Tosafot, so I didn't want to miss them. Now we go back to the Gemara. Mantana, netinat mayim l'dio, zohi shiriyatan. Who's the one who says that putting the water together with the ink, that is considered to be the shriya, they're soaking, and that is considered to be the isur. The isur is not to mix them, the isur is simply to pour the water in there. So I'm Rav Yosef Rabihi. This is authored by Rabbi Titania. Echa notenet ha-kemach, ve'echa notenet ha-mayim. If one person puts in the flour, one person puts in the water, acharon chayav, divrei Rabbi. The latter one is always chayav. Rabbi Yosi, or Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, omer, enu chayav ad shigavel. You're not chayav until you need it. Pouring water and flour together is not the isur. The isur is mixing them, govel, to actually knead them together. That's the isur of lisha, the admelach of lisha on Shabbat. But to simply pour water together with flour, that's not the case. But you see from Rabbi, that he thinks that pouring the water and the flour together is the isur, then same would be true here. Soaking the ink to make it usable would be the equivalent of putting the water together with the flour. Maybe Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda only objects to the position of Rabbi in a case where you normally would need such an item. Kemach and water, as we said before, you don't just pour them together, you have to actually knead them in order to get to the next stage. Of al dio, when you're talking about ink, the lav bar gibuhu, it's not something that you mix. It's not something that you have to actually knead. You simply pour the water together. That is the next stage. It's done at that point. Eim l'chayev. Maybe he would also agree to Rabbi's position. Why are you saying this is only the position of Rabbi and not Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda? Even Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda might agree in this case. Right? Says, lo, sal, kadabcho, detanya. We have a brayta. Echa notenet ha-efer, ve'echa notenet ha-mayim. You put in ashes and water. Acharon chayav, divrei Rabbi. Again, the one whoever takes the latter action, according to Rabbi, is chayav because he completed the process. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, ad shigavel, until they actually need it. So here we're talking about efer. Efer is something that is not normally needed. It's something that you soak in water. You don't need it in water. And yet, Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda has his position that ad shigavel, until you mix them, there is no isur violated here. V'dilma my efer. What do you mean efer? Efer ashes, maybe afar the bar gibulu. We're really talking about earth or dirt, which is something that you can knead and you can make into a solid object. So the Gemara is saying maybe here there was a mix-up in the bright. We've seen it in other places in Shas where efer really means afar. So maybe that was the mix-up here. Gemara says you can't say that. Vatanya efer, vatanya afar. We have two different brayot, one brayta that says afer with an aleph, one brayta that says afar with an ayin. So what do you mean they got mixed up? Here we have two clear separate statements in the brayta of the position of Rabbi Yosi Yehuda. Interesting answer to the Gemara. Midei gabei hadad etanya? Were these brayot juxtaposed? Who says that these brayot are authored by the same person? We have Breitot of Rav Oshia, we have Breitot of Rav Chia. Maybe one Breitot was from the school of Rav Chia, one was from the school of Rav Oshia. And the two of them are saying the same thing, Afar. One of them, when it said Afar, really meant Afar. You can't question two Breitot and say the Breitot are problematic unless you know that they have a similar origin over here. Since they don't necessarily have a similar origin over here, maybe they're from two schools and they both mean Afar. You can't prove anything to me about Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda's position based on these Breitot. Tanu Rabbanan, putkim mayim legina erev Shabbat im chashicha. You're allowed to open up the water chute or the water channel into the garden right before Shabbat, and then it'll fill for the entire Shabbat. You're allowed to let the water continue to flow and to fill the area over Shabbat. Also, one can place the incense under the clothing, and you can have them go the entire Shabbat. So here, when they used to launder, in order to deodorize the clothing afterwards, they used to place this incense under it and leave it there. And the incense used to deodorize the kelim, and here you put it on right before Shabbat, and you let it go through the whole Shabbat. Menichim gafrit tachar kelim, and one can place pitch under the kelim utensils here. Here we're talking about silver utensils. Umit gafrim v'olchim kol Shabbat kula, and then they have the pitch under them the entire Shabbat. Rashi explains that this is silver in which you carve or etch pictures. And in order to highlight the pictures, what they used to do was they put pitch under the silver to blacken the silver and to highlight the etching would not become blackened. And therefore, the etching would then become pronounced because it remained silver while the rest of the kli became black. And one can place eye ointment on the eye. V'isplanit agabe makah, and a bandage over a wound. U'mitrapad v'olechet bo yom kulo, and it can go ahead and be curative and work for the entire Shabbat. Aval, ein notim chitim l'toch rechaim shel mayim. You may not place wheat inside of a water mill. Elo b'kdei shitachanu mibol yom, unless the milling is completed before Shabbat. My time. What's the reason for this? Amarabo, mipnei shemashmat kol, because it makes a lot of noise. It's a principle on Shabbat called Absha Milta. Absha Milta is that you may not be engaged in activities on Shabbat that make a lot of noise. Part of the Shvita of the Shabbat is that even though they're not malacha in and of themselves, they're not problematic, but because they make a lot of noise, that's considered to be a problem or a violation of the Shvita of the Shabbat, and one may not do it on Shabbat. Not an Isur, but a violation of the assay of Shabbat, of Shvita to Shabbat, that one must rest and make it into a quote-unquote Shabbat type of atmosphere. When you have the quote-unquote Shabbat atmosphere, that atmosphere means that there shouldn't be too much noise.
Would it mean that might apply to working on Shabbat?
Right. That is part of the issue, is that people might think you're working, but even with the knowledge that you're not working, which is here in a water mill, even if you set it up before Shabbat, and there is no human intervention. As opposed to a handmill or a mill run by animals, over there you couldn't even do this before Shabbat because of a separate issue, which is you're working on Shabbat. The working is being done on Shabbat either by you or by your behemoth, who both need to rest on the Shabbat. Here it's happening by itself. You have no intervention. There's nothing to do with you. But because of the noise, the Absha Milta, that's a problem on Shabbat. And it's as Rashi says, Ika Ziluta. It's not just that people think you're working, but it's a denigration, it's a inappropriate type of noise that you make on Shabbat, on the day of rest. So that's Rabbah's opinion about why that is asur as opposed to the first half of the Braita. Samar Rav Yosef, Leima Mar, Mishum Shvitat Kelim. Why don't you say the whole problem here is that Kelim need to rest on Shabbat as well? We said so far humans must rest on Shabbat. Shorcha v'chomorecha, your animals must rest on Shabbat. What about your utensils? What about your property? Do they have to rest on Shabbat as well? So Rav Yosef says, what about Shvitat Kelim? D'tanya, v'chol asher amarti aleichem tishameru. So this is the end of the pasuk that deals with Shabbat, that your animals must rest on Shabbat, amanu yanuach shorcha v'chomorecha on Shabbat, that they rest. And then it says, v'chol asher amarti aleichem tishameru. The Gemara Dashin, the Rabot Shvitat Kelim, the word of v'chol. Everything includes your utensils, your items, your property. They must rest on Shabbat. Talaram Rav Yosef, Mishum Shvitat Kelim. Telling you the reason here that it's not permissible to use the water mill is because your kelim, your utensils, must rest on Shabbat. Now, v'hashto damar to Beit Hillel itluhu Shvitat Kelim do raito. Well, now, if you think that Beit Hillel thinks that Shvitat Kelim is min haTorah, that you're explaining this braita according to Beit Hillel, and saying that Shvitat Kelim applies to everybody, even Beit Hillel, then Gafrit Umigmar, my time was Sharu. What about the earlier part of the braita? In the earlier part of the braita, we let you use the incense, we let you use the pitch, we let you do all of these items that involve your utensils, and they continue through the Shabbat. Why over there is it permissible, and over here by the watermelon is it impermissible? He says, Mishom Deloka Avid Masa, there's no action being taken over here. They go by themselves, and they do whatever work they have to do without your intervention. They aren't really active. It's a passive activity, we call it. The fire continues to burn, and that's it. The incense comes out, or the pitch blackens the item, but you don't have any really activity. With the mill is actually moving. The mill is going and moving, even though it's a watermelon, you have no actual activity there, you're not doing anything, but the movement of the mill and the activity of the mill is the problem here, and that's problem of Shvitat Kelim. So Kelim that simply are bases or holders, that's not going to be the problem. The problem is when there is something active happening inside of the Kelim. So the Gemara says, Onim shel pishtan, my time masharu. Okay, so now you've explained Gafrit and Mugbar. What about our Mishnah? In our Mishnah, we had the Onim shel pishtan, which Beit Shammai said was asur, but Beit Hillel said was mutar, that you're allowed to dry out the flax before Shabbat. And there the kli is important to it. The tanur is a part of the activity. Mishum delo avid masa. So because again, he didn't do any maisa. It's the equivalent of the mugmar and the gafrit, where you place it, the fire is going, and they simply are there to hold the activity. They're not doing anything active. So when it says, Umeiniach naichi mitzudot chayav ofid dagim, the kavid masa. Wait, what about traps? When you lay out traps before Shabbat, where Beit Shammai says it's asur, Beit Hillel says it's mutar, the traps actually work on Shabbat. They trip the trap on Shabbat, and that captures the animal. My time is sharu. Why is that mutar? Hatamnami belechi v'kokori. Delo avid maaseh. There are cases where they use traps that are not active. They use a lechi, is like a fish hook. The hook is there, the fish just comes and bites it, and that's it. He's stuck. The trap itself is not active. It's a, just sits there in the water. And kokori are the equivalent of, you see sometimes the dogs wearing them, these hoods that are narrow in the front and wider in the back. So what ends up happening is the animal runs into them, or a fish goes into them, and they put their head in, but their body is unable to move through. But when they try to pull back out, because they're sharp or because they're narrow, it gets caught, whether it's on their ears or on their fins on the way out, they can't get themselves out of the trap afterwards. So again, the traps themselves are not active here. They simply sit in place, and then the animal becomes trapped. So again, there, that's the reason that there's no problem with Shvitat Kelim. Hashto, da'amar Rav Oshia, amravasi, mantan l'shvitat kelim d'oraita, Beit Shammai. According to Rav Oshia, who says, the author of Shvitat Kelim d'oraita is Beit Shammai. V'lo Beit Hillel, and not Beit Hillel. Until now, it sounds like Rav Yosef suggests that the author of Shvitat Kelim is even Beit Hillel. And then we have to make explanations, or have come to explanations for all these activities here, that why Beit Hillel says they're mutar, even though they think that Shvitat Kelim is problematic. But Rabbi Yoshia says, no, that the Tan, or the author of the position of Shvitat Kelim in a Torah is Beit Shammai, not Beit Hillel. The Beit Shammai, ben kavid maase, ben lo kavid ase, asur. The way Beit Shammai's position works in Shvitat Kelim, it doesn't matter if the utensil is active or inactive, they are sur on Shabbat. The Beit Hillel, Afagav, the kavin mas is shori. And according to Beit Hillel, even if it's active on Shabbat, it's mutar. So then, according to Beit Shammai, who says that even when it's not active, it's asur, Yochi, mugmar v'gafrit, my time asharu Beit Shammai. Why do they allow this activity of mugmar and gafrit? We didn't see any objection in the Braita to the fact that mugmar and gafrit were allowed to be done. So Gemara says, Atamanach ara. And they placed it into the ground. They didn't use a kli. They dug a shallow pit in the ground, and they lit the fire inside of that shallow pit. And in lighting inside of the shallow pit, then you have the mugmar, the gafrit, burning inside the ground, not inside of a kli. So therefore, going to Beit Shammai, it would be fine. Then, what about gigit, v'ner, v'kterav, shiput? All of these items, Rashi says, gigit, shashecher betochol, the barrels that the beer is inside of them. And all these, the items that kdeira, shiput, all these kelim that you use on Shabbat, and we know that are mutar to be used on Shabbat, My time is Sharu Beit Shammai. How can you use your kelim on Shabbat? So Mara says, "Demafkirlu afkure," that you disown the kelim, and therefore you're not mitzuvah shvitatan. By disowning the kelim, we allow you then to use these or utilize them on Shabbat. Oh, so it's very interesting. So Tosafot asks your question and says, "Wait a minute. Being a mafkir your kelim is not so easy." Gemara in the Darim says that you have to do it in front of three people. And you have to make this declaration, and it's not just a simple, you know, willy-nilly thing where you can just be mafkir your kelim. So Tosafot over here says that here they were mekil. Says, over here you don't have to do it in front of three people. The mistama mafkir lehu. We assume that he would be mafkir them here. We know that he really wants this to happen, and he would do it. He says, but ainly smocha zel askir sus lenachri lehafkir. You can't go and rent out your horse to a non-Jew and then say, I'm mafkir it, so that when he uses it on Shabbat, it's not a problem. You can't do that. He says, that's much more, first of all, nobody's going to be mafkir their sus. First, you're collecting rent on it, and you're getting paid for it, and to say, oh, yeah, no, it's not mine, that you can't do. Then you have to do a formal disengagement from the ownership here. He says, that's not going to work. He says, number one over here, you're trapped. Beit Shammai says, you're trapped. How do you have a candle? You light your candles going to Shabbat. What are you going to do? Your candlesticks are burning through Shabbat. How could you do that? Or other activities, your pdeira, that you leave on the oven going into Shabbat. If it's done in a permissible manner, it's cooking, it's still being heated into the Shabbat. How do you do that? So since there's no other way to do it, we allow you to do it. And ain't of our for some, it's not a public activity. It's not something that where everybody else knows about it. It's, you know, your horse that's working out in the field, that people know about. Whether your candle is working in the house or your lamp is working in the house, that nobody knows about, nobody's focused on. So Tosafot asks your question, says here we're mekil by hefker, to say, yeah, if he simply says, I don't want it anymore, that's enough, according to Beit Shammai. Now, what Shaul says, Tosafot over here, you can see it, Beit Shammai, says now, based on that reasoning, Hanach Gimel Bavot Kamaita, the first three sections of the Mishnah, in Sharim Dio, Smananim Ba'onim Umitsudot, Avu Mishum Shvitat Kelim. The reason that you're not allowed to do them on Shabbat is because of Shvitat Kelim, according to Beit Shammai, the way Raboshi is explaining it. Why Beit Shammai objects in those instances is because of Shvitat Kelim. But the latter half of the Mishnah, Mochrim Lenachri, Orot Labdan, Bekelim Lekubes, Lavi Mishum Shvitat Kelim. But there your Kelim are not involved. So what's the latter half of the Mishnah about? Time to ask you, Beit Shammai, Mishum Demichlach Lishlucho, like Rashi said. That over there we're getting worried that he's doing your bidding. And we don't want him doing your bidding in Melachot Oraita, because you might come to do it yourself. If you tell someone else to do it, you'll eventually end up doing it yourself. The Mishnah will be divided up into two reasons. The first half of the Mishnah because of Shvitat Kelim. The latter half of the Mishnah because of Shlucho. It looks like the Nachri is doing your activity. Now, in terms of Psak Halacha, it's interesting. There's a machloket in the Tosafot here as to how we paskin. So if you look, Hashem Damar Ravoshi, it's the last Tosafot on Yud Chedem and Aleph. Omer Rabbeinu Tam, the Hilcha Tikka Rav Yosef. The Halacha is like Rav Yosef that says the problem here is Shvitat Kelim. The Muki Breita like Beit Shammai, because he can set up the Breit like Beit Shammai. The Rav Oshia, Kai Kavate, because Rav Oshia is like him who says that the problem here is Shvitat Kelim. It says you have Rav Yosef and Rav Oshia. So you have a Amora, you have an Amora and then a Tana who are both saying that the problem here is Shvitat Kelim. Ulfize, according to this, Rechaim Mutarim. Then you can use the mill, the water mill on Shabbat would be Mutar. To the day, Beit Hillel Shari. Because according to him, Beit Hillel would say that's totally fine. There's no problem with Shvitat Kelim. Afilu Heichad Dekavid Masse, even if it's active. Velo Chayish Leshmat Kol, and he doesn't worry about this Avsha Milta. He doesn't worry about this noise issue on Shabbat. So basically, what Tosafot is explaining here is that the machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef of how they explain the Braita, Rabbi said the problem in the Braita with the milling is that it makes noise. Rabbi Yosef says the problem in the Braita is that it is Shvitat Kelim, that the Kelim are active on Shabbat. So Rabbeinu Tam says, now, I have Rabbi Yosef saying the problem is Shvitat Kelim, I have Rabbi Oshia saying the problem is Shvitat Kelim, that must be the halacha is Shvitat Kelim. But we don't pass them like that, because that's Beit Shammai. We pass them like Beit Hillel. If we pass them like Beit Hillel, you can mill on Shabbat in a water mill, no problem. Because what, problem with noise? Rav Yosef doesn't consider noise to be an issue. Only Rabbah did, but we don't pass them like Rabbah. But then, that's what it says, Vili Nira. Derboshia, lo muki, that Rav Oshia is not like Beit Shammai, la shasu dukamar hachi. It's not Rav Oshia who says that the author of that braita is Beit Shammai. It's the Gemara that's saying that. The hamani Beit Shammai, aliba de Rav Yosef, to muki la mishum shvitat kelim. That according to Rav Yosef, who says that braita is speaking about shvitat kelim, then we're going to establish that it is Beit Shammai. Ava Rav Oshia matzino la meimer, to muki la ke Beit Hillel. Maybe Rav Oshia himself thinks it's Beit Hillel. And he holds like Rabbah. So what the Gemara says is, what Tosfot suggests over here is that the Gemara has two opinions. They have an opinion of Rabbi Yosef that the Braita is problematic because of Shvitat Kelim. I have a position of Oshia that says that Beit Shammai thinks Shvitat Kelim is problematic. What did the Gemara do? It put the two together. It said, Rabbi Oshia plus Rabbi Yosef. If I put them together, it means the Braita is authored by Beit Shammai. But that does not mean that Rabbi Oshia himself believes that that Braita is like Beit Shammai. That was the Gemara's doing. But Rabbi Oshia himself might hold that that Braita is according to Beit Hillel. And the problem in there is, as Beit Hillel says, is because of Shmat Kol. Because like Rabba. So I have no proof from here that Rabbi Oshia is supporting the position of Rabbi Yosef. The Gemara thinks that, but Rabbi Oshia himself, we don't have a proof to that. And therefore, Bechem Pasak Rach. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Chanan was passing that way, that we time along to Rabbi Oshia, that we pass along to Rabbi Oshia, that Shvitat Kelim is a problem of Beit Shammai. Umuta Bashil Kelim Nachri. You can lend out things to a Nachri. You can lend out your kelim to a non-Jew and he can do whatever he wants with them because there's no din of shvitat kelim. Aval behemto asur, your animals asur because there you're chayav in shvitat behema as opposed to shvitat kelim. But if we do say the halacha is Rabbi Oshia, we have no proof that he doesn't hold of avshamilta, and therefore we do paskin. That's the way we do paskin halacha that avshamilta is a problem on Shabbat, and anything that's a noisy activity on Shabbat one is not permitted to do on the Shabbat. So the water mill then would be asur. You see, machloket and Tosafot, whether the halacha avshamilta is a problem, we paskin, and Tosafot concludes that avshamilta is a problem, even according to the conclusion of this Gemara here. Right now, continuing in the Gemara, we now are going to enter into a area that is some of the fundamentals of issues of Shia, leaving items on the fire going into Shabbat, cooking on Shabbat. Man tana lahad tana rabbanan. Who's the author of this Tosefta? A woman should not fill up a pot full of these, as Rashi says, that they are these, whether the legumes or some sort of item that requires heavy cooking. Termesim are lupines, asisiot
are pounded wheat or peas, or according to Rashi, some form of kidneyot.
V'taniach l'toch ha-tanur, erev Shabbat im ha-sheikha. She can't put them in. Im natnan, if she did this, if she did do it, then she may not benefit from them, may not get, take them out of the tanur on Motzei Shabbat and use them. You have to have enough time post Shabbat that you could have done this. Because we don't want you benefiting from malacha that was done on Shabbat. A baker should not fill up a pot full of water Erev Shabbat Imashecha, on Erev Shabbat, right at the onset of Shabbat, in order that he have hot water on Motzei Shabbat, in order to bake with. If he does do so, the Motzei Shabbat is Surim G'day She'asu. On Motzei Shabbat, we penalize you and say you have to wait until you could have done this whole malacha after Shabbat. So who's the author of this position? Somebody says, Lema Beit Shammai. This sounds like Beit Shammai, which is a problem of Shvitat Kelim. Your Kelim are doing work on Shabbat, and that's the problem over here. Below Beit Hillel. Beit Hillel says Shvitat Kelim is fine, so they should be allowed according to Beit Hillel. The Gemara says, Afilu Tema Beit Hillel. Even Beit Hillel will agree in this case, Gezeira Shema Yichate Begechalim. Maybe you will stoke the fire. So here we introduce something that's very important, which is Beit Hillel agrees to Beit Shammai in these instances, which is we have a difference in opinion between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. Beit Shammai says Shvitat Kelim, Asur, is mandatory on Shabbat. Your kelim cannot be involved in any melacha on Shabbat. Beit Hillel says mutar. That means that technically anything that you put in place right before Shabbat, as long as the melacha works by itself, going into the Shabbat, Beit Shammai is going to say asur, Beit Hillel is going to say mutar. The exception to that rule has to do with cooking. The exception to that rule is that cooking, and that is because of exactly what Beit Hillel says here, Shema yichate b'gechalim. You might stoke the fire. You have an extreme fear that if you see going into Shabbat that it's not working what you want to happen, you're going to stoke the fire in order to increase the heat in there and to have whatever you want to accomplish happen. And Beit Hillel agrees that we worry about going into Shabbat. Therefore, in these instances where you want the water to stay hot through Shabbat and be ready on Motzei Shabbat, you want the turmesim and asiyot to be done after Shabbat, you want the heat to be sufficient that they cook. If it's not, what are you going to do? You're going to stoke the fire to ensure that they cook faster. That, even Beit Hillel agrees, we have a chashash for, and we're not going to allow you to do it going into Shabbat. Where it says, Yochi, Mugmar v'gafrit, Nami Ligzor. What happened to the incense and to the pitch? We said before you're allowed to have them deodorize the clothing or blacken the silver utensils. How come those are allowed? That's not a fire. So why don't you go there over there for the same problem? Shemei chatei b'chalim. When it says, ha'atam lo machti lehu, nobody stokes that fire. Di machtik salik lehu kutra. This is a very, very delicate and gentle process, which is that you need the clothes to be deodorized, but what you don't want to happen is smoke to come up. Smoke comes up, black smoke comes up there, you're going to ruin the kalim, you're going to ruin the clothing that's sitting there. So you want them to deodorize without any black smoke coming up. But kashilu, and that will ruin them. The same thing with the silver. They have to burn at a very specific rate. If you stoke the fire, you risk making them burn faster or cause black smoke to come up. And if that's the case, you're going to ruin them. What about our Mishnah? Onim shel pishtan. What about the bundles of wet flax in our Mishnah? Nami ligzor. Over there, you should also have the same problem with stoking the fire. Hatam came into kashilu zika. Problem there is that air gets in there, it ruins them. They have to be cooked inside, they have to be baked inside of the oven in a way that they're not exposed to the air. If they're exposed to the air, it ruins them. They have to be completely sealed in. So nobody's going to risk ruining them than opening it up to look inside, because then it would ruin them. So you're not going to stoke the fire because you can't get access to it without ruining them. What about wool inside of the cauldron to dye it? Over there you should have a gzera. Amar Shmuel. We're talking about a yoreh, a cauldron that's off the fire. Somebody says, worry about mixing it. So this is another important principle in cooking on Shabbat, that megis. Mixing is the equivalent of cooking on Shabbat, because you increase the process of cooking by mixing it. So for instance, this happens all the time, if you have a cholent, that is on the crock pot. If you open up the cholent on the crock pot and you want to take out from that cholent, unless you scoop off the top of it, it is a sur, because you're mixing it while it's ala ish, while it's on the fire, and that's considered to be a problem of cooking on Shabbat. Megis ala ish in Shabbat is the equivalent of bishul b'Shabbat, and one may not take items out of a pot on the fire on Shabbat. You have to remove them from the fire before you take items out, before you scoop the food out, because you're going to come to mix it while you're scooping the food out. Again, unless you skim the top off, which in most cases people don't do when they're serving, whether it's soup or it's cholent. They mix it first and then they serve it, because otherwise you're just going to get what's on top there, not the entirety of the dish. So magis is a problem. So over here too. So he took the cauldron off the fire to dye the item, but he could still mix it in order that the dye will take better. So that would be a problem on bishul on Shabbat. So bakura v'tucha, that not only is it off the fire, it's sealed. It's sealed up on top. They used to put some sort of seal on the top of the item to keep the heat inside, and therefore your access is blocked. So since your access is blocked, nobody's going to go undo the seal and then go mix it on Shabbat. Even though, and this is an important exception, that if you sealed it up, and the question was whether you're going to stoke the fire or not, people will break the seal to stoke the fire. They will not break the seal in order to mix. So this is an important thing. How worried they were about stoking the fire was an activity that seems to be very common and something that people were anxious about. And they would do it. Like, without thinking, they would do it. I'm assuming because getting fire and getting fires lit and having things stay hot was very difficult in their day. So to stoke the fire was something that was very important. To keep things lit and hot was very important. And therefore, stoking the fire is something that we worry about, even if it's sealed. We're going to see that in a second. Over here, once it's sealed, to mix the pot, that the guy will remember. By the time he's undoing the seal, remember it's Shabbat, he won't do it. But for Shema Yechatei B'Gachalim, we still worry about it even when it's sealed. And we're going to see that in 1 second in the Gemara. Alright, so next, the Gemara says, Vashta Marmar, Gzeira Shema Yechatei B'Gachalim. Once we introduce this concept of stoking the fire, then Haik Deira Chaito, Shari Lanucha Erev Shabbos. If you have a pot full of raw meat, you can put it onto the fire right before Shabbat and not worry about it. My time. Kevin de lo chazi de orta asuche mesef date mine. Lo ate lechtuye gichalim. Since you have no intent of eating it tonight, the purpose of putting something raw on the fire is that it'll be ready for the next day. Ready for the next day, nobody's going to come and stoke the fire because there's plenty of time to cook. There's plenty of time to be ready. Stoking the fire is when there's a certain amount of anxiety about it. You want it ready for now, and it's not cooking fast enough, the heat is not high enough. In those areas, we worry about Shema Yechatei at HaGichalim. But in instances where you put raw items onto the fire, there you have no intent of being finished tonight. There it's fine. Therefore, Bashil Shaper Dami, and it'll cook over that period of time without any problem. Bashil Velo Bashil Asur. If it's partly cooked, then it's Asur. Partly cooked is because the assumption is that it's going to be ready for tonight. And since it'll be ready for tonight, then you're going to go stoke the fire in order to accelerate the cooking so that it's ready for your Friday night meal. Now, Tosafot points out, when we say bashil below bashil, tzarech lamar, dolavi kemachal ben dusai. Has to be below the threshold of machal ben dusai. Machal ben dusai is the threshold for cooking on Shabbat. If it reaches that point, then you're ready considered to be cooked on Shabbat. It's machloket arishonim, whether that means one-third cooked or one-half cooked. If the item is cooked beyond that point, there's no longer an iser bishul midoraita in terms of solids. And after that point, you could leave it on the oven, because then, even if you stoked it on Shabbat, technically you would not be increasing the bishul, because it's already mivushal. So there, it has to be below that threshold, but partly cooked, and not totally cooked, where it could be ready for tonight. There we worry about Shemi Chaladeb Chalim. So now, what's the solution to that problem? This is a solution for a cholent as well, which is that if you put up the cholent right before Shabbat, you don't have a problem, because everything's raw in there. You don't expect to eat it beforehand. If you put up the cholent very early on Friday morning, then everything's cooked. By the time you come into Shabbat, technically it's cooked, and it just continues to cook through the Shabbat. It's already past Machal Ben Dusai. But if you put it on like an hour or two before Shabbat, then you do run into a problem where it could be ready for Friday night. And we have the problem with Shemi Yichatei B'Khalim. So the suggestion, and this is what the Gemara says here, Bishadi Be'gar Machaya Shapir Dami. You put in one limb, you put in one aver raw, put in one piece of meat right before Shabbat, that's enough. As long as you throw in one raw item right before the Shabbat, that means the person's mesiach dat. He doesn't have any intent to use it anymore. If you put something raw in right before Shabbat, we know that you're not going to use it Friday night, and therefore the whole cheshash of Shemi Yichatei B'Khalim goes away. Anything that's exposure to the air is problematic for, people do not open up. Hibisra the gedayo, the meat of a goat, vishorik, and the oven is sealed, shafir dami. Then you can put on before Shabbat and we don't worry about it because you won't break the seal to stoke the fire because you'll ruin the roasting of the gdi. The barcha, on the other hand, if it's a large animal, like ayel gadol, large ram, velo sharik, and it's not sealed the oven, asur. There it's a sore because you will come to stoke the fire in order to have it cook. Because there, you don't have either of them. Exposure to the air is not problematic, and it's not sealed. Question is, where do you have one of them? Digdaya velo sharik. You have a goat in there, which will be affected by exposure to the air, but it's not sealed. Or the barcha v'sharik. Or you have a large ayol, a sheep, a ram, that's in there that won't be affected by your exposure, but it's sealed. Is that enough to stop you from stoking the fire? Ravashi shari, Ravashi says it's fine. Rav Yirmiyahu midifti asir, says it's asur. Ula Ravashi the Shari, according to Ravashi, says it's mutar. Hatznan, we have a Mishnah coming up. In tzolin basar batzal ubeitza. You're not allowed to roast meat, onions, and eggs. Elekadeshi tzolim yulod yom, unless they're roasted before Shabbat, the onset of Shabbat. So hatam de barcha velo sharik. That's a case where exposure to air does not affect them, and it's not sealed the oven.
Therefore it is
asur,
even according to
Ravashi. So Igadamre, the Dayo ben Sharik, ben Lo Sharik Shapir Dami. So some say that this is the way to phrase it, that when it's talking about a goat, whether it's sealed or not sealed, it's okay, because the exposure to the air is going to ruin it, nobody's going to open it up. The Barchanami, even by an Ayol Gadol, Bisharik, and it's sealed, Shapir Dami, because it's sealed. Kilplige, where do they argue? The Barcha below Sharik, in a case where it's an Ayol and it's not sealed. The Ravashi Shari, Ravashi says there it's Mutar, Ravir Mirmi Difti Asur. Ula Ravashi the Shari, Ravashi says Mutar, Vatznan, again the Mishnah coming up, Insulin, Basar, Batsahu, Beitza, El Kadeshi, Tzolomi, Botiom, you can only roast these items in the case where they'll be roasted before Shabbat. My answer is Hatam Babisra Gumre. They were talking about meat directly on the coals. They're not inside the oven, they're directly on the coals, it's cooking on the coals themselves. So because of that, we can't allow you to do it because there's a high likelihood that you're going to stoke the coals, even according to Ravashi. But Ravashi over there, you don't have anything. You don't have a seal on the oven. You don't have any mitigating factor that's going to make you or stop you from stoking the fire. Sam Ravina, hai krachaya, shapir dami. If you have a raw gourd, shapir dami. Came into kashile zika. It's the same principle. Since exposure to air is problematic for it, bisur gdaya dami. It's the equivalent of meat of a goat, where exposure to air is problematic, and therefore you're not going to stoke the coals, because you're not going to risk opening the oven in order to stoke the coals, because it will ruin the item. If that's the case, that's a mitigating factor. What you see here is that the sealing of the oven by itself is not sufficient, because the sealing of the oven, according to Rabbi Irmiyahu Midifti, will break through. Even though sealing of the yoret was enough to stop you from mixing it, it's not enough to stop you from stoking the fire, and therefore the seal is not enough. You need grufa and tuma. You have to remove the fire, you have to clear out the coals, you have to make it that there's no possibility that you will stoke the coals. Alright, Beit Shammai Omrim Ein Mochrim. Shammai says you may not sell to a Nachri. Tan Rabbanan. Beit Shammai Omrim Lo Yimkor Adam Chepetzol Le Nachri. Lo Yishalenu Velo Yilavenu. Person may not sell his item to a Nachri. Not lend it to him. Lo Yishalenu. What does it mean to lend something? Sheila Davar HaChuzer Be'ein. Halva'a B'davar Anitan LaHotza'a. Sheila is to lend something that returns intact. Halva'a is a loan. Something that you expect to get replaced and not come back. So you lend money, halva'a with money, because you don't expect exact coins back, you accept the amount back. You lend sheila, a kli, a utensil, because there you expect the item that you gave to come back. So that's what Rashi differentiates between sheila and lo yilavenu, that you may not lend in both perspectives. You may not lend the actual item to expect it back, and not lend money that you don't expect the item back, but you expect repayment back. And not given as a gift, unless he can reach his home before Shabbat, until he gets to the house that's closest to the wall, meaning that in his city, in the Goy's city, he reaches the outskirts of the city, because technically he could leave it there. If he could leave it there already, we don't worry about it anymore. Rabbi Kiva Omer, as long as he's out of your house before Shabbat, it's totally fine. And Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, hein divrei Rabbi Akiva, hein divrei Beit Hillel. That Rabbi Kiva is explaining the position of Beit Hillel. That he's not coming to give a third opinion here. He's saying that the Tanakhama explained Beit Hillel wrong. When the Tanakhama explained that Beit Hillel said that you have to wait until the Nachri can get to the outskirts of his city, that's not true. Beit Hillel says as long as he's out of your house, it's totally fine. And again, Rashi brings up the issues. What's the problem here? It's his own item now. Again, it looks like he's doing your bidding, he's doing your work with your utensils, and because of that, we do not allow it unless he can get close to his house, according to Beit Shammai. Beit Hillel says, if it's his item, it's his issue. So therefore, as soon as he leaves your house, it's out of your perspective, it's out of your domain. As long as it's out of your domain, we don't worry about people getting mixed up of shlucho anymore.